This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is BFM 89.9, 7.06 in the morning, 23rd November 2020. I'm Koo Soo Chuang, joined by Wong Xiaoning. Now, in about 15 minutes, we'll talk to Aidona Jan Ayub, Deputy Director at the Khazanah Research Institute, on the outcome of the 2020 APEC Leaders Meeting last Friday. But first, how did markets do last week, Xiaoning?
It was a bit of a mixed batch because the Nikkei was down 0.4% and they are closed today, by the way. Hang Seng and Shanghai was up 0.4%. Straits Times Index had a stellar day, up 1.3%, and the FBM KLCI was up 0.6%. Meanwhile, US markets were all in the red. The Dow was down 0.8%, S&P 500 down 0.7%, while Nasdaq was down 0.4%.
So to get down and dirty about how global markets are heading, we've got on the line with us Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer with Jevons Global in Canberra, Australia. Kingsley, thanks for joining us. Markets retreated after Powell and Mnuchin's public spat over the clawback of government funds. What's the disagreement over, and will it have any lasting effects on the equity rally?
Well, I think there's a little bit of confusion now on that exact point. It seems to us as though what's really going on is the Treasury, which is backstopping the Fed on certain loans programs like the CARES Act and also Main Street Lending, that the Treasury would like to walk that back. And we think that that probably is because many of those loans weren't taken up, and maybe Treasury wants to reassign that capacity to direct grant programs. But it's really unclear at this point in time. The Fed obviously would like to just keep market confidence by not changing anything. So we'll just have to wait and see what's going on.
Meanwhile, Kingsley, if we stay on this topic, do we know whether there's any headway with regards to the stimulus package that I think the Americans are looking forward to, especially since a lot of unemployment benefits are going to end by year end?
Yeah, it is murky right now because, of course, with this fractious presidential transition underway, there's a lot of politics going on and some positioning perhaps to make the Biden inauguration a little bit more difficult than otherwise would be. But it's too hard to say at this stage whether it will happen. Certainly the market would like to see the stimulus, but we'll just have to wait and see how it grinds through the process.
Well, the funds flow has indicated, Kingsley, a recent rotation into cyclicals and favouring big cap stocks. Are you bullish on any small caps, though, or at least the sectors that might benefit if the rotational play continues?
Yeah, certainly, because there's a number of factors going on. Firstly, bad times don't last forever. And certainly with COVID, although there is a big second wave happening now across the world, we are seeing good signs of recovery in places like China. The second thing I'd point out is that global autos, which is a really big sector in terms of consumer demand and also jobs for manufacturing, it's starting to recover after about a three-year slump. So I think, therefore, a lot of the small cap suppliers into autos are probably doing well. And the third area that's interesting is electronics and semiconductors with the move to 5G, and also these big trends on consumer devices going into homes, which obviously uses a lot of electronics like smart TVs and 5G.
And, because there's a little bit more of optimism in the market over the vaccine, do you think demand for gold is going to soften? There's so much QE already in the market. Can it still serve as a hedge against future inflation?
Well, there's not much sign of inflation. And as you've seen with the gold price, it's fairly stable now. It's not rising anymore. So I don't think there's a high expectation of inflation. But what we will see, I think, is some firming prices in the energy markets because those prices fell for oil simply because of weak demand. And now when we see demand coming back, we should see some price rises there. But I don't think it's sustained inflation.
Yeah, Kingsley, some data points due out from America this week. Obviously, US jobless claims and GDP Wednesday, and then, of course, Thanksgiving Thursday, then Black Friday, the traditional start of the US holiday shopping season. Any kind of like points of view on any of those three data points?
Yeah, well, I think Black Friday is going to be a big one. What's happened in places like Australia is where it's been less bad, shall we say, with COVID. It turns out the consumers have stacked away a lot of cash, so savings are actually high. I suspect there's a similar effect in parts of the United States. There's some people doing really badly, of course, but others have been able to save money while retaining their jobs. So I think that Black Friday might see actually some revenge shopping. We'll just have to see what happens. They could be good numbers. And if they are good numbers, that will lend support to this rally.
Now, Kingsley, despite, like you say, the likelihood of this rally, right, at the same time, bond yields are at record lows. Equities also have been becoming increasingly volatile. So what's the ideal portfolio allocation going to be for generating alpha in this current investment climate, though?
Yeah, it's tricky because we have still a lot of sectors that are in trouble. On the cyclical side, I mean, if we really do come back strongly, then I think, you know, travel and leisure will start to do well. We saw the Boeing 737 MAX getting back into the skies. I'm not sure how many people really want to fly on the MAX, but we just have to wait and see. If they do, then that's obviously great for stocks like Boeing. Elsewhere, I actually think China's really the big story. They've done reasonably well in the recovery so far, and those export numbers for China look great. So I think the big thing we have to look out for is whether we see a bit of a, shall we say, a freight train develop where China is pulling along other countries in the emerging markets complex, particularly in Asia, in these areas of strength like electronic components, home furnishings and autos. If that happens, we could have a really good market next year in Asia.
But Kingsley, where would you put your money in China? In what particular sectors? Would it be the index heavyweights, which in the past has been traditionally finance and telcos? Or are you looking at some new sectors though?
Yeah, the places that we're interested in China, in addition to those that you mentioned, you know, obviously you have the big tech, but there is this big push now because of the US-China, you know, Cold War, whatever you want to call it in tech, that Chinese are trying to build up their semiconductor industry. And there's meeting with very strong demand for semiconductors globally. So I think whether you're investing in semiconductors outside of China or inside of China, it's a good sector to look at. And so that means both Chinese stocks within the electronic components industry, but it also means European stocks like ASML that deliver the equipment that's needed to make semiconductors. So I think semiconductors is really front and center right now as a CapEx play on recovery and consumer electronics.
All right, Kingsley, thanks so much for your time. That was Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer for Jevons Global out of Canberra, Australia. Now, obviously, no market discussion is complete without a discussion on China specifically. And he did say a lot of things, not just in terms of the telco traditional and finance play, but also in semiconductors. I wonder whether we'll see some kind of reaction in Malaysia with the Inaris and the Globetronics of this world.
I think we already saw that since... Okay, the lowest point in the market was probably in March, right? But since then, all the tech companies have actually recovered. Global supply chains disrupted initially, but have recovered very quickly. At the same time, you know, we have seen the launch of some big things like the iPhone 12. So, of course, that's been good news for the tech sector. But also, actually, just that his big point is that at the end of the day, yes, you know, we are facing a global recession. People are beginning to feel a bit of pinch when it comes to spending patterns. But at the same time, there are huge chunks of society or even some people who have luckily kept their jobs and because of COVID-19 haven't been able to spend the money and squirreled it away. So there is some pent-up demand for some electronics, consumer goods, and that's translating into better sales for semiconductors. And I think the key thing is, of course, everyone's looking at a 2021-2022 recovery, right? So, you know, I think investors are also adjusting their portfolios in that way. And whatever you say, semiconductors seem to be the winner in this COVID-19, other than gloves.
Yeah, it's bizarre because I went at the Curve the other day, right? And even Mid Valley, right? And you walk by the Maxis store and there's queues.
Yes, I saw and a queue too.
I asked them, why are you queuing up? Oh, because iPhone 12 is coming out.
Yeah.
And this is the kind of the super cycle thing that Dan Ives has talked, you know.
And you're talking about a phone that is not cheap. It's 5,000 ringgit.
The cheapest, right? The most expensive, what, 6,002? It's crazy.
I think it depends. I think it depends on whether you have a package or you don't. But I mean, these are not cheap consumer goods, yet there is pent-up demand.
Well, talking about packages, China Evergrande Group is looking to raise as much as $2 billion and a Hong Kong IPO of its property management unit, Evergrande Property Services. Now, they're going to try and sell 1.6 billion shares, about 50% new stock, 50% so-called sale shares, which I think is another way of saying the owners are getting out. And the price range is at 850 to 975 Hong Kong dollars. So the range is quite narrow by the looks of it. And they have a green shoe of maybe 15% to meet demand. And this is interesting because they got 23 cornerstone investors. So you would imagine that in China, property might not be it, but it is. And this is property management.
Yeah, but I think the one thing facing Evergrande is that they have a big debt pile of $120 billion. And they, however, and I think originally people were assuming that they were going to do this IPO to pare it down. But they have then said that now 65% of net proceeds will go towards acquisitions and investments, with the rest going into technology upgrades and talent recruitment. Now, this IPO is part of the trend of China developers spinning off management units in Hong Kong at a record pace, maybe trying to follow the failure of Ant. Everybody tried, Ant tried, but didn't succeed.
Ant was such a train smash, wasn't it? But just in terms of the operational aspects of this deal, It might not be so calamitous, because if you've got an environment where interest rates are near as near zero as can be, why would you want to spend your firepower to pay debt when you can be buying assets on the cheap, because assets are very, really cheap at this point in time?
Plus, interest rates are near zero.
Near zero. You can even collateralize your cash.
Which maybe is not a good thing, because then everybody binges on cheap credit.
Which is no different from the last 12 years. But
unwind this?
It is what it is. Okay. Sources are telling Bloomberg that Blackstone is doubling down in Asia and seeking to raise about $5 billion for its second private equity fund, focused on the region, double the size of its first buyout fund, which closed at $2.3 billion in 2018. They're trying to raise big amounts of money because dislocations from the pandemic is offering it more deal opportunities. President of Blackstone, John Gray, has vowed to increase the proportion of Asian investment in its total business, which is just under 10% 2 years ago.
Yeah, Asia is where all the deals are, right? So even KKR, their big competitor, they're in the process of raising at least $12.5 billion for its next Asia fund. Now, the point is, with all this dry powder coming to Asia, what does it mean for all the smaller PE funds which originated in Malaysia or originated in Southeast Asia? They're going to have a lot more competition on their hands, because these guys, they can raise huge sums of money with just a snap of their fingers.
Yeah, but PE is PE, right? There's no excitement necessarily in PE. You've got to wait. You can't play that daily.
No. It's a time game for monetization, but an interesting one.
Yeah. Okay, earlier this month, Royal Dutch Shell pulled the plug on its Convent refinery in Louisiana. Did I read that right? Convent? Wow. You just mentioned a bunch of nuns at the oil refinery, right? But unlike many oil refineries that have shut in recent years, Convent was far from obsolete. It's fairly big by American standards and sophisticated enough to turn a wide range of crudes into high-value fuels. On that bombshell, 7:18 in the morning, we'll come back after this with some more news. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.